The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from National Geographic. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we begin with another story from the July 2024 special issue of National Geographic. Now, this issue is devoted to how indigenous cultures are reclaiming not only their identity and diverse locations, but also reestablishing their culture, voice, and practices in a modern world. Now, today's story is titled The Center of It All. It is written by Awaki Emezi of Nigeria and features fashion designer Adeju Thompson. As the editors note on the cover page, despite repressive laws and societal stigmas, many indigenous Nigerians, including those in the LGBTQ community, are expressing and celebrating their true identities. Now, we're going to read the first part of this. It's sort of an introduction, then we'll tell you a little more about the article. In Adeju Thompson's design studio, the walls and ceilings are a rich cobalt blue, and every surface is covered with art, from sculptural bronze pieces to piles of books and family photographs. An artisan from his team sits at a large table using a feather to paint careful lines of cassava paste on a sea of white fabric, creating a deer cloth with traditional Yoruba technique. This resist-dyed fabric will be transformed into garments for Lagos Space Program, Thompson's luxury fashion label. I'm returning to my home country from New York, a rare visit to Lagos since I launched my literary career in 2018. In the years since, I've published 7 more books and been on the cover of Time magazine, but as a queer Nigerian author and artist who chose to leave, exile still breathes down my neck. Nigeria isn't a safe place for its queer and trans citizens, yet other queer Nigerian creatives remain at home, either by choice or circumstance. It's special to see someone like Thompson creating genderless clothing collections in Lagos, more particularly making art rooted in cultures that our own people try to deny us. In Thompson's hands, Lagos Space Program is an African design spun into the future, experimental and singular. It is not only a ready-to-wear brand, but also a concept patterned in history. With this body of work, Thompson recently became the first African designer to win the International Walmart Prize, a prestigious award for rising stars in the fashion industry. Walking into his studio in the Lagos mainland feels like entering a pocket of weighted and delightful possibility. We sit on a couch draped in deep blue adir, drinking cups of tea as we chat about the evolution of culture and working from our respective indigenous centers as an Igbo artist and Yoruba designer. Now, in the next section, we're going to feature excerpts from a conversation between Emezi and Thompson. And the editors state that this interview was edited for length and clarity. So we're going to begin first with a comment by Awaki Emezi. I think about centers in my work because of that Toni Morrison quote where she said, "I stood at the border, claimed it as central, and let the rest of the world move over to where I was." So with decolonization, it's defined according to the white center we are moving away from, right? Well, I feel like re-indigenization focuses on the center that we're moving towards. What center are you moving towards? Adeju Thompson. I grew up bullied and very insecure, very introverted. When I went to school in the UK, my professor could see where my work was heading, and he asked if I knew about the Anthrop 6, about the Yoha Yamamoto and the Japanese designers. These artists work as different from anything I experienced in fashion design in Nigeria. It was very introspective, very vulnerable, and it reflected that moment in my life. I wanted to be a Nigerian version of it. I'm now obsessed with Yoruba culture. It gives me so much pride in myself and how to put myself into the world. But initially, I consumed Yoruba culture on the surface. People, being loud or colorful, branded with Gucci glasses and loud lace, I never saw myself in that. A few months back, though, I was shopping with my cousin at a Prada shop, and I realized I like shiny things, and then laughs. Amazing. You've come back around, Thompson. I tell people I'm in my Yoruba anti-energy. I can really design my life how I want it. I can find these shiny things very appealing, but I'm still that guy that's emotional and sensitive. And by the way, in the word Yoruba is spelled Y-O-R-U-B-A. Now, I am Americanizing it a little bit in my pronunciation. They're more likely to say Yoruba. Yeah, put a little more on that U, but just to give you an idea. Anyway, back to Amazie's comment. When I think of the shininess, I think of it as a very old culture of adornment, right? It may look different in a contemporary skin, but the essence of it is ancient. Thompson, look at how these women are dressed. Look at the drama of the draping. This is so romantic, you know. Look at how people wear the abadas. Look at the intensity. Do you know what it means to put yourself out in the world in this way, to carry yourself in this very powerful way? And they are reflecting on the special style of clothing that the Nigerians wear. I hadn't seen that at first, because when you go through a lot of trauma, you close yourself up. From when I was a child, I never had a problem with being gay, but there was still a lot of growth to happen. I was actually very anxious before you came. I was like, I wonder how Awaki will feel about this. When I discovered non-binary as an identity, I felt like it was me, like I'd found something I could use to protect myself and fight back against the trauma of my masculinity growing up and not feeling like I was accepted. Amazing. Do you still feel like you need that identity as protection? Thompson, no, not at this point in my life. I now have the audacity to design my masculinity. I like the fact that I was allowed to go through my journey as an individual to get to this point. But I don't want my truth to feel like it's disrupting other people's identities. Amazing. The year that my novel Freshwater came out was the year that I said I was non-binary. I was trying to build bridges of legibility between myself and this public that was now perceiving me. After a few years, I was like, you know what? If I'm really moving towards this indigenous center, then I want to abandon the language that doesn't belong there. So it's not that I'm non-binary. I don't have a gender because I'm a spirit, and spirits don't actually have genders. Identify is a useless verb to me. Either I am the thing or I am not the thing. With re-indigenization, people usually think about it as a linear return. So much of your work is acknowledging the past, the histories, these really ancient techniques, but very much looking to the future. Thompson, my work is really about all the culture I consume, whether it be art, cinema, music, filtered through the Nigerian lens. I like that I can put myself out there now and say that this is what it means to me to be a queer designer creating work. I hope that another queer designer is coming behind me and can say, I love Adiju for what he did, but this is my own version. Amazing. Some people think that the only authentic culture is whatever existed when we were colonized, as if white people came and turned their gaze on us and we were frozen in amber. Thompson, apparently our culture doesn't evolve. Amazing. I don't think people realize that for centuries it was evolving. As indigenous people, we create our culture every day. You're of the culture, therefore anything you create is the culture. Thompson. My new collection started when I went to the bookshop at Versailles. I was so impressed by the materials, the opulence of everything. I went down that rabbit hole and came up with fusing Yoruba dress codes with Eurocentric tailoring to create a new visual language. There's this Yoruba festival called the Objudi Oba that happens once a year. It's a beautiful spectacle. Families parade themselves in front of the king, in front of the Yoruba world. With this collection, it's about a fictional person who lives in European society but is very Nigerian and preparing for the Ojude Oba Festival. Amazing. There's so much to be said about our parents' generation, those who were in London and were very, very Nigerian. My father was one of them, very Igbo, and there's no part of him that would ever stop being Igbo. There's still a story he tells about being at the visa office in London, and he told him he was eligible for a British passport. This man started shouting at them, did I ask for a British passport? I have a Nigerian passport. All the Nigerians who were queued up there started cursing my father like, you're a foolish man, how can you turn down something like this? Thompson, as young people, how can we educate ourselves on our culture and realize, wow, I've been lied to. How did I not know how powerful where I come from is? Amazing, because we're not taught it. Thompson, I'm very proud to be a Nigerian person. I went to the Kisan Festival, and it was such a spectacle. There was a lot of lace, a lot of bronze. There's this virgin who's carrying a sacrifice of fruits and honey for Kisan. It's very heavy, and she walks with the support of the community in front of, and in front of her is an entire army of women with daggers and a brass mirror like, don't mess with us. As a designer, that comes back into my collection. That helps with my own world building. I want to educate people and highlight Africa's progressive identity pre-colonization, how the barbaric people were the colonizers. Amazing. When you started doing this research and introspection, do you feel like it changed your spirit? Thompson, what the colonizers really tried to do was strip us of our identity, so when you reclaim who you are, you come into yourself. For me, that's meant that I'm bolder in my approach. When I'm designing my collections, I have no limitations. When I'm making a deer, I'm radically thinking, what does a deer designed by a queer person living now look like? So that's the end of the interview, and next we're going to have a series of photo captions. These written by Nigerian journalist Nelson C.J. Igbo. C.J. is based in Lagos and has been published in the New York Times, Rolling Stone, and Time magazine. As the editors in National Geographic note, this is a series of portraits from Yagazi Emezi of nonconformist Nigerians who are reclaiming their space. And the first one we have is Aaron Ahulum, who grew up aware of the freedom that Yan Dadu, a Hausa term that means men who act like women and is often used colloquially to describe gay men, afford to self-expression despite the harsh conditions queer people endure. It is a history of Ahulu, who is a queer organizer and communications creative, draws from when combining their indigenous identity from northern Nigeria down to how they choose to present themselves through fashion. Here he is in jeans and a very specially designed top and loaded with lots of silver jewelry around his neck and an interesting cape. And he's atop a roof, and he's just throwing his hands up in a V fashion. And there's a quote from Aaron. It says, freedom for me extends beyond artistic boundaries. It encompasses the lifestyle that rejects capitalist norms and assimilation and allows for authentic self-expression. And then next, Lagos-based creative O. Lawson, who is pictured at right, shifting away from her English upbringing to develop and connect her with Yoruba self. She is one of the few publicly queer women in Nigeria, along with her partner, Oyai Ipki Itam, and they're both pictured here on this photograph. The couple, both filmmakers, openly identify as queer on social media and run one of the country's biggest queer balls. For Ipti Edom, indigeneity means acknowledging that she was born and grew up in Lagos, but was raised by Igbo women from southeastern Nigeria, creating a fusion of cultures she treasures. My favorite thing is being able to have those two identities intersect without any issues, she says. And then we have a quote from her. On this day, I can be happy to wear an Adir Agabada, on another day, wear an Abidio Onyo, and still feel equally connected to these cultures, describing the types of clothing that they are wearing. Now, on to the next caption. Indie musician Zainab Donnelly, better known as Lady Donnelly, approaches the complexities of her indigenous identity as a constant marriage of the varied cultures and histories that birth her. Her paternal great-grandfather hailed from Chad and escaped from slave traders before coming to Nigeria. Her father is Hausa from Kadena in the north, while her mother is Ijo from Belasia in the southern part of the country. I have never specifically felt a sense belonging thoroughly to my Hausa identity, and neither have I felt the same for my Ijo identity, she says. I've always grown up and just thought, I'm Nigerian. And the quote, freedom is being able to do what I want without fear of condemnation, without fear that my identity as a queer black woman is going to get in the way of everything that I do. The next portrait is a young man leaning back on his car trunk, and he's wearing what looks like a sports jacket. It's red and black sleeves, and he's wearing kind of capri-style jeans and a white top. And it says, A queer fashion designer, Jordine Omolulu Vangai, was raised connected to his Yoruba culture. As a young child, he lived with his mother's side of the family speaking Yoruba. That changed when at 5 years old he went to live with his father, who prioritized English and Western sensibilities. "I had to start speaking English," he says, "so being indigenous is something I had to hold on to for myself." Vangi, who is a trans man, finds comfort in the understanding that Yoruba history, his history, is filled with figures who defied convention. In his quote here, "Realizing who I am makes me feel better. That was the freedom I needed. Being native is not a sin. It's nothing to be ashamed of." And then our next caption, "For Ezra Olubi, a renowned innovator and business leader who founded Paystack, one of Nigeria's biggest tech companies, the concept of indigenous identity is closely tied to developing one's structures of safety and freedom. It has been a series of putting things in place to create an ideal bubble around myself," he says. "This is something I've been doing over time, depending on wherever I am. One such bubble is his home, where he was photographed, which is in the area set slightly away from the relentlessness of Lagos. It's a simple room, white walls. I can see the corner of a frame of a picture in one corner of the picture. He's all black, wearing a cross around his neck. And his quote is, "I'm testing the limits of what's acceptable. Like, okay, I want to paint my nails. I should be able to do what I want." Then our next caption, writer Ayodele Olofintuad is training as a Yoruba traditionalist, a process that involves learning the ways of Yoruba spirituality and its connections to one's ancestry. "Indigeneity is not conferred, it's who you are," she says. Olofintuad, who is a queer woman, says the guidelines of Yoruba traditions are more accepting of non-conformist identities than Western religions. Her quote, "I am Yoruba, and so automatically all the wealth and all the miseries, all the flaws, all the perfections of the Yoruba lineage I am born into accrues to me. I am connected to my ancestors." Our next caption, and this is a woman who has got on a cape, blue and interesting stripes and navy colors and grays, and then several kind of necklaces dangling around her neck using local crafted beads and wearing sandals. A British-Nigerian artist and filmmaker, Remy Vaughn Richards, contemplates the role of race in the development of her Yoruba identity. Her main question, "If one straddles various cultures within oneself, who or what determines what accurately define one's identity? Being indigenous to me means embracing the culture you're from. I am indigenous in the sense that I am interested in traditional spirituality. I am indigenous in the fact that I like to wear a deer, which was a way for women to pass messages between each other in the past." The quote, "The world, the whole world has become a mishmash of Westernisms. So how can you be indigenous? Well, look how I'm dressed for a start. I combine both." The next caption reads, "Fashion creative Jantel Peters, or JP, hails from Delta State, but grew up disconnected from his indigenous identity. Peters, who is queer, did not meet the cultural demands expected of him at home, and instead found his freedom dancing on the ballroom floor. His quote, I've always known me. I have always seen myself. I am free and beautiful." And let's see, I believe we're on our next to the last caption here. A creative and style nonconformist, Charles Oputa, is better known by his artistic alter ego, Charlie Boy. He has shifted the scales of masculine presentation in Nigerian media from his androgynous appearance during the release of his hit album 1990 to a much-publicized kiss with entertainer Denroley Eden. Oputa's father, former Supreme Court of Nigeria Justice Chiwaka Wudifu Oputa, was Igbo. As Charlie Boy, the younger Oputa found a connection between his spiritual guide and his indigenous identity, adopting a spiritual warrior he calls Oduduba Riba. I know Charlie Boy has a feminine side with all this personality wanting to come out. Sometimes it's my female side that takes the upper hand. Sometimes it's my male dominant side that takes the upper hand, is the quote here with him. And then a final caption here. Ido restaurateur Obey Ikohamo, photographed with her three children, has found a connection between rejecting the pressure of societal acceptance and paying attention to her spiritual guides, whom she describes as two genderless beings. I have trashed the whole ideology of being accepted or rejected by society. It's about having a stronger center. She adding that this spiritual center helps her advocate for more needs, or for her needs. It also grounds how she approaches grief as an Edo woman. After she lost her father, he came back to her in dreams, reassuring her. And then we have this quote from her, being indigenous means being in touch with my ancestors and learning from lessons they have passed on, bringing that into the present day. Well, we'll have more stories from the July 2024 special issue of National Geographic in future episodes of Armchair Traveler. Next, we're going to head to Arizona, where writer Ruby Mellon explains how this city turned its scorching heat into a tourism draw. This article appeared in the August 4th, 2024 issue of the Washington Post, and we'll read an excerpt. For most of the year, it's not hard to attract visitors to this city. This is Scottsdale, Arizona, a city known for its spa resorts, golf courses, and astonishing Sonoran beauty. When summer hits, the heat is enduring and oppressive. Travelers saw a problem, but some in Scottsdale sensed an opportunity. If you can't beat the heat, why not sell it? Well, the triple-digit temperatures, true, but not tricky or sweat-inducing. Marketers claim in an ad campaign called It's That Hot that launched nationally this year. The unrelenting heat, elegant, they assured, like a sage-scented sauna. And for those bold enough to seek out summer in Scottsdale, there are unbeatable rates at hotels and resorts that have innovated their offerings to accommodate blistering temperatures. A warming planet is upending summer travel rituals and the ways regions try to draw visitors. Sweden advertises coolcations as southern Europe bakes. Adventure travelers increasingly seek out destinations as if their last chance to see natural wonders. And Europeans visit Dubai for air conditioning and indoor skiing. Scottsdale is leaning into the very thing that might deter summer vacationers while adapting events to high temperatures. Hotels offer scheduled activities centered on heat relief, including nighttime mini-golf, cabana misters, and poolside movies. The campaign's national success remains to be seen, but some heat and tourism experts worry there are dangers to romanticizing heat when advertising a travel destination. Some hotels reported an increase in the number of guests from the East Coast and the Pacific Northwest, places that have experienced unusually scorching summer temperatures over the past 2 years. Vacationers said they came for the pool parties, good prices, and cuisine, but were also leaving behind extremes such as wildfires, humidity, and weak air conditioning. It's really smoky in Calgary, said Hannah Hagford, who was stretched out on a turquoise pool chair as a DJ played Dua Lipa. She and her best friend, Corinna Miller, left the Canadian city for a long weekend at the Hotel Vallejo, a mid-century modern resort in the center of Scottsdale. It was the first hotel in the city to have central air conditioning. The smoke didn't push the duo back to book a flight. They loved the heat and the pools here, but it was nice to have a break from it. Miller said she was riding her bike last month and could feel it seeping into her lungs. The hotel has seen an increase in the summer out-of-state visitors in recent years, said Kristen Hadeby, the director of marketing and communications. They're just experiencing heat wherever they go, she said. We're more equipped for it. Hagley was getting out of the city for the last week in July. I'm headed for Seattle, she said. It's supposed to be so beautiful in the 70s. Poolside at the hotel, cabana misters breathe a constant stream of sweat, cool air. But at midday, the pool itself had already warmed to a bathtub-like temperature. A few chairs down, D.C.-based immigration attorney Yalda Hajavi was looking forward to flying back to humidity the next day. Was not looking forward to flying back to humidity the next day. It's dry heat, she said, running a hand through her dark curls. My hair is longer here. From 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., the Fairmont Scottsdale Princess, a sprawling resort in the city's north, kicks off summer camp with potato sack races, cornhole, and mini golf. Fans attach the strollers word on sleeping babies. Misters clouded young children toting tiny putters. And one dad carried a caddy of brightly colored water bottles for his family. As a rose gold sunset spread across the sky, twinkle lights popped on. Juan Landeavazo was thrilled to see the activities offered in the early morning and the evening. He and his family had spent the hottest parts of the day at the mall before he came out to test the camp games with his 5-year-old son, Dexter. The family from Albuquerque has taken the heat seriously ever since their other son, Dominic, vomited from heat exhaustion at a mini golf course in Scottsdale about 5 years ago. Now they take extra precautions, including staying inside when they need to and wearing cold towels around their necks. "We are more careful," he said. "Even at midnight here, it's still hot." It was almost 8 p.m. A young girl in denim shorts and a T-shirt ran in front of a misting fan and yelled, "Ah, this feels so good." Experts worry, however, that the tourism campaign glosses over the real perils of heat, which the United Nations has called the deadliest form of extreme weather. "I think it's dangerous," Jennifer Marlin, a research scientist at the Yale Program on Climate Change Communications, said of the ads. "I immediately started worrying about people who were flying in from other climate conditions who are not adapted physiologically to extreme heat." Maricopa County, which includes Scottsdale, Phoenix, and Tempe, conduct some of the most detailed heat death tracking in the country. The country has recorded 37 heat deaths this year. None of them were in Scottsdale. The city, a more upscale Phoenix suburb, said it has prioritized green spaces, shade, and air conditioning to offer safety. Of 645 heat-related deaths recorded last year, 25 were in Scottsdale, according to Maricopa County. There are daily reminders of the dangers heat can pose. On the last Friday in July, a family of 13 from out of town had to be rescued around 10:30 a.m. from Scottsdale's McDowell Sonoran Preserve, said Dave Folio, public information officer for the Scottsdale Fire Department. "One child was evacuated by helicopter for heat illness," he said. "The department does one or two rescues every day in the summer," Folio said, "and 70 to 80% of them are heat-related." "The biggest misunderstanding people have of heat is they underestimate it," said Scott Hamilton, the preserve's manager. That's a challenge, that Jennifer Marlin often faces. "There's a cultural dismissiveness towards heat," she said, noting there are risks in traveling to Scottsdale in the summer, even if you stay inside or by the pool. What if there's a power outage? What if there's a particularly severe heat wave? Experience Scottsdale, the nonprofit behind the campaign, is contracted by the city for tourism marketing. Officials said they make safety awareness a top priority. "No other time throughout the year is our marketing leading with the fact that there are dangers," said Stephanie Pressler, the organization's director of community and government affairs. "We try hard to be as open and honest about it." She added that in the summers it emphasizes indoor activities like museums and shops and doesn't advertise some of the city's most popular draws, hiking, ATV riding, and horseback riding. And that, my friend, brings us to the end of today's journey on Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it, and you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. Questions and comments may be directed to 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.